Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And welcome to another evening of the Head of Household's virtual talk show for men. We got another one for you. I got a Barry Bonds home run hitter for you tonight. I think you're going to really, really like this episode. I think I'm going to end up being on somebody's street, avenue, and probably in somebody's driveway knocking at the door before the night is over with. But before we start, just want to go over a little ground rules here. Just remember, there's no cursing. Respect others' comments. And be yourself. Be yourself. And if you don't want to say your name, but you want to say something, you can be anonymous. That is fine on this call. This call is set to just help another man in their situations and maybe get something out of it yourself. Also, for anybody who would like their wives to get on the call, we have a virtual call for the better half. It's actually on right now. It comes on Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, and it is on TalkShoe.com. And that PIN number is 65013. That's 65013. Please, if you want your wives or lady friends, significant other to get on that call, please chime right on in. Our topic tonight, my family is dysfunctional. My family is dysfunctional. Is it the head of household's fault? Wow. When I thought of this topic, I said, wow. You know, there's a lot of things you can say, hey, you know, I either came from a dysfunctional home, or I know somebody, or you know somebody who has come from a dysfunctional home. So there's some things that we need to ask ourselves. Is it the head of household's fault if we lose our homes? What's going on in the news right now? What's going on where you see every single day? Mortgage foreclosures. People burning their homes down for insurance policies. People are losing their homes every single day. Something that, you know, you wanted that American dream. You wanted that house with that picket fence, the dog in the back yard saying roof, and you wanted to make sure that your family was comfortable and you were able to provide for your family. Here it is, because our economy says that we're going through a depression, recession, downfall, whatever you want to call it, we go through these problems. One, my question to the audience is, does that, if we do have problems in our home, is that a dysfunctional home? Can anybody answer that question for me?
I just got a question.
Yeah.
What's a dysfunctional home?
Oh, that's a good question. A dysfunctional home is a home that is this has a lot of different categories when you're talking about a dysfunctional home. Dysfunctional home can be somebody who is not in the home. If a man is not in the home and there's a missing piece of the puzzle there, a dysfunctional home can be children being disobedient, not being taught properly in the home. Disobedient home can be drugs, alcohol abuse. It can be domestic violence and domestic abuse. It can be hunger. It can be anything that is not what we feel makes the home happy. You know, if the wife, we always heard that word, if the wife's not happy, nobody's happy at home. That can make the home dysfunctional. Dysfunctional can be anything. It can be that you went to work, you did everything you want, but you didn't take care of your bills. Having financial difficulties due to the fact that you overspent. That can make and not being disciplined in your finance. That can make a home dysfunctional. Communication can have a home dysfunctional. All these different categories can be rolled up. We could be talking about this thing all night. But I want to find out from you, what do you think a home, what makes a home dysfunctional? Anybody want to answer that question? What do you feel makes a home dysfunctional?
So maybe like you said, the an absentee parent?
Yeah.
Might be a contributing factor to it.
Okay, so let's talk about the absentee parent. The topic is it the head of household's fault if the home is dysfunctional? If the man leaves the home and he leaves the wife in charge, does that make the home dysfunctional?
Depends on how long the man leaves. You know, if it's indefinite, of course it makes it dysfunctional.
Okay, can you elaborate, please?
Well, you know, when, you know, I think of dysfunction, I think of, you know, kind of out of order, you know, things aren't right. And, you know, primarily, you know, in an example, like you said, where you have just one parent in the house, things are already out of order just, you know, from that point, you know, right off the jump. So despite everything being routine or orderly, even in that one-parent home, is still going to be quote-unquote dysfunctional because it lacks structure.
Lacks structure. I like that. Lacking structure. I mean, don't you see it on the news all the time?
Mm-hmm.
If the home is dysfunctional, does that show up outside of the home?
Absolutely.
It does, doesn't it? Because you got to think about it, man. I was looking on the news, and one of the reasons why I got off this topic is because of all the negativity that you see in the home, all the negativity that you see on these reality shows. You see all these reality shows, and young people, older people just doing idiotic, crazy things. But majority of these folks come from what we consider good homes, from looking from the outside in. But does that mean because it looks good from the outside in that it's actually good in the inside, looking out? Because what I was able to find out is that people like to rebel once they leave the home. Men like to rebel once they leave the home. When they leave the home, they feel like a relief of, whew, I'm glad I'm out that place. Let me go to the workplace and let me deal with these other issues. Not worry about home. Well, I'm going to start another relationship outside of my home. But I'm going to come home and make sure and live like everything is okay. What do you think? Is that a scary thought? Is that something we live through every single day?
No, I don't. I would say that my home is not dysfunctional. Mine is, you know, and I have no military background, but my house is, you know, pretty much very orderly. Everything is structured. As far as, you know, the time where homework gets done, you know, bedtimes, you know, so it's not, you know, only on, you know, the weekends is where my kids can stay up past their bedtime. But, you know, during the week, you know, whether grandma's here or whatever, they go to bed the same time, and it's just that's just how our, you know, our home works. And I think that goes back to my childhood, whereas, you know, I had a pretty structured, you know, home life. I had both parents. My parents are still married today. They've been married almost 41 years. And, you know, so my home life was, my childhood home life was structured. And I think that that just carried over, you know, to my, you know, my life now, my adulthood with my own kids. And, you know, I would definitely commend my wife, because I don't know if I would be disorganized, you know, if I wasn't with her, because she likes everything, you know, on a routine, on a schedule. And, you know, I've embraced that, you know, over time, and it helps the house flow. So, my house personally is not, you know, I can't really relate to dysfunctional in my childhood or, you know, or now.
Okay. But do you know somebody who's had that problem?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And can you tell the difference between how you were brought up, and was there any difference between that person who came from a dysfunctional home?
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, probably even, you know, back in my day as well, a functional home was abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
The normal is dysfunctionality. And so, you know, of course you see behaviors and things like that. But I think it's unfortunate that, you know, as time has progressed, functionality is sort of abnormal, you know, versus the other way around, you know.
Yeah, because that's the main reason why we're having this conversation, is because as we live now, the way we, for men that are in the home, are we trying to kind of image our home as we were brought up? Were we trying to make sure that our home is presented in the same way we were brought up, with those values that we were brought up with? Because I've been in homes where values, where the home was messy, so when you dated a person, when you went in their house, their house was messy, so it was okay in their mom's house, so it was okay in their house, so that the house is messy. Has anybody ever been in that situation?
Yeah.
Because I believe we all have gotten to the point where you're like, wow, I don't know if I can be in a situation like this, based on the fact that, hey, this person lives filthy. I want to be with a person who lives filthy. Does that make that person dysfunctional? No, but the way their upbringing may have made them, because you got to think about these things when you get married. And that goes into our next one. Is it the is my family dysfunctional because of the wife I picked? Have you, when you were dating and courting your girl, did you ever look at how she was brought up and her family values from her parents? Does that ever go in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was key, you know, to me marrying my wife, is because she did have great family values. You know, she had two parents in the house and, you know, everything. So, you know, that was a plus. So she had that as part of her foundation. And again, you know, carrying that over into, you know, our marriage today is, I'm sure, you know, part of the functionality of, you know, of her childhood household.
Yeah, because I have to say, you know, you never know how a person is until you see their family.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a true statement, Tom?
I would agree. I would agree.
It's just odd, because I guess, especially in big families, if you just sit down and look at how a family treats each other, you kind of know what you're going to get from the spouse that you pick. You know, if you have one parent that is that argues all the time, and you have one that is a neat freak, and you got one that has different values than others, somehow the person that you go with has a trait of all three of those. And you wonder sometimes, like, wow, why am I going through this? It's because of their family values. And this thing makes it important because when we pick our wives, understanding the values of what she's going to bring into your home, I don't think we at the beginning, do we talk about that? Do we talk about this is how we're going to raise our children, this is what we're going to do in our home? Or do we just assume once we get married, everybody's roles and position and responsibilities in the home?
We assume because we're not caught up in the, you know, the finding out, the discovery of, you know, we kind of on the surface when we're on that, when we're in that that dating mode. So we know, no, we don't, you know, ask those questions and or take note, you know, of how they came up.
You sure?
No,
you mean when you first got married, you ain't be like, all right, this is how we're going to roll, you know, I'm going to take care of the bills and you keep the house clean, or, you know, because I think.
I mean, I think we didn't really sit down and talk about it. Like, it just kind of got done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's why we're on here, you know, right now, is because we don't communicate enough. So, I mean, I don't think we actually had to sit down and it's like, all right, you know, this is your responsibility. We sort of kind of figured it out as we went.
Right.
I think in my case, my wife was very structured. Coming from a very functional family, and I came from a very dysfunctional family, and I had difficulties dealing with her functionality.
That's good.
Came from a dysfunctional family.
What
is your definition of dysfunctional family?
But dysfunctional for me was coming up at a time where there was, you know, my father wasn't there. My mother raised us. When we were younger, my father was an abusive type of dude. And it was witnessed throughout the family. So the dysfunction came from the standpoint of some who witnessed it carried it on in their lifestyle after the fact. And some of us rebelled against it and turned was very adamant about, you know, never putting a hand on a woman and what a man should never do. So it was very dysfunctional in the home. So where we experienced it when we were younger, then we experienced it when my brothers became older and they had girlfriends, and some of them were kind to them, and some of them were belligerent, mean, and straight out abusive. I mean, literally to the point of punching. So, yeah, in essence, yeah, I do understand what you're saying, because I've seen the dysfunctional side of it for years. And it's not a pretty sight, and it can be very damaging, and it can carry on generationally if it's not corrected.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I know why there's a reason why there's a lot of men that's on this call that are quiet, because this is a very hard topic for a lot of people.
Of course.
Because first you got to admit that you came from something that you don't want to admit to. That you didn't come from a perfect upbringing.
No doubt.
And second of all, you got to look at yourself in the mirror. That's the main reason of this call. That's why this call is so powerful, and I said it's going to hit somebody in the street. Because you got to look in the mirror. You got to look in the mirror because some of these choices, when we're talking about the home, comes from somebody else. It's what we saw. It's what we, you know, seen growing up.
Yeah.
So we take that responsibility with us.
And that's true. And a lot of us need to take off that mask, man, because a lot of times, you know, like you said, you made a very good point that there's still a lot of us today that are dealing with certain issues that don't want to reveal the fact that we are. And like you said, it is difficult to come out and say that, hey, I have that problem, because no one wants to be viewed as an abuser. No one wants to be viewed as a person that has no control over how they at home, because we all want to portray an image of something that's, you know, perfect to you in the eyes of our friends.
Yeah. One thing I was talking about that what makes this call so good is that you can stay anonymous and you can still talk about yourself. And you feel better about yourself when you get off the phone because of situations that you may have been through. And nobody's gonna look different of you because you're releasing that,
no, that's right.
You know, that past by just getting it off your chest right here on this call. Dysfunctional homes are all over the place. There's no such thing as the great neighborhood down the street. Dysfunctional homes comes to, we just saw the other week. You know, you have the great American family. You have this guy who had all this money, planes, everything. But he hit hard times. He hit that financial crunch. And what did he do? He burnt his own house out. He left his own kids and his wife in the street. And he took his life by running a plane through the IRS building just because that dream that he was living was going away, and he didn't know how to handle it.
I think there's another name for him, though.
What is that?
I mean, that's, some people might think it's the easy way out. You know what I mean? Just not dealing with the situation. You know, if you owe back taxes, you owe back taxes. I mean, it is what it is. You know what I mean? But just like you said, you know, you put your family out. That's like you cut off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, that's the only thing.
With finances, put a burden on his family because he left his family out there in the cold.
Yeah, but guess what?
Had enough.
He had a house. So it's not like he was homeless. They had a house. They had a roof over their head. You know what I mean? So whatever situation it was, obviously it might have been salvageable. You know, and there's never a time when you can't call and make payment arrangements to the point where it's like, okay, you know. But he did the unforgivable sin, because you can't ask for forgiveness when you're in the grave. You can't do it. You know what I mean? So he took the easy way out, and I'm hoping that, you know, that that's not something that we definitely want to follow.
No, and that's another reason why we need to fix the dysfunctionality now. We had a case on TV in the Maryland area just yesterday where a woman couldn't handle her kid, killed the kids, put them in a freezer, and was still collecting checks like they were living. And the thing was, is that is a terrible, terrible thing. And we know that.
Well,
the next thing they did was interview the father, the real biological father of these kids. If he would have been with those kids in the first place, would this have ever happened to those kids? That's my question.
That's the unknown. That's the unknown. And let me say why. And two, and I'm going to say this to the defense of the head of households on the phone. Sometimes we meet women and we don't know who they are. And I'm not saying because we didn't do our due diligence to find out who they are, but it's that they were somebody else for the first year, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever the case may be. And you never knew the 8 years, so you never know who you got. You know what I mean? And then when you find out who they are, it may be a situation where you're like, okay, now I got to think about my safety. Would a person like that would do that to their own children? You can't. You got no room to cut up if you're a husband. Because what do you think is going to happen to you? You see what I'm saying? So a situation like that, how can you blame the head of household if he said, okay, and we don't support divorce at all on this call. You see what I'm saying? But we are realistic when we know the fact that sometimes just certain things aren't disclosed to you of who this person is. And by the time you find out, we've had people on the call before say that they had to get out of a relationship because of safety reasons.
Right.
That right there could have been something where the man said, look, I'll support y'all from a distance, but I can't be with this woman. She's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Which she actually turned out to be.
Right. So my frustration is based on real events. So go ahead, Rodney. I know you're good.
Yeah, I wanted to just throw a monkey wrench in here and just change the whole concept of dysfunctionality a little bit here, if you don't mind. But I was wondering if when you talk about dysfunctionality, or actually being dysfunctional, what about when you have households where you don't have any structure as far as finances, budgeting? And what I mean by that is that you don't really have a concise handle on what's coming in, what's going out. You just kind of just going through and hope you make it, but not really, you know, sitting down at the table saying, all right, you know, this is this. We got this coming up, you know, this next month. You know, I don't know if that was on your to-do list tonight, but, I mean, from the standpoint of your finances can be a little bit dysfunctional.
Yeah, that's part of under the home, and that finances is one huge thing that can really corrupt the home. It's another good thing because in talking about it, it's the main thing that causes divorce, which makes the home dysfunctional because divorce traumatizes not only the man, the woman, but the kids. So let's talk about it. Anybody want to answer that question that Rodney put on the table? Take a stab at it.
What's the actual question? I'm trying to decipher what the actual question is.
Yeah, what I was trying to wonder is that and I'll speak for me personally because the last 2 months, you know, we've been trying to get back on budget. But previous to that, it was some periods last year where it was just like, you know, we went on vacation and just spending it up. And, you know, our finances weren't, you know, we weren't communicating about, you know, where we were, you know, financially. So we had a little bit of dysfunctionality around that. And my question was, you know, is anybody going through that where you kind of walk in and, you know, the lights are on and, you know, everything is, you know, the heat is running, but you have really no idea, you know, what's going on financially in your household? So that's what I was trying to see, if anybody's experiencing that where they just, you know, no clue what's going on financially, whether the, you know, whether you 2 months, you know, from being evicted or, you know, or you just have no clue. You know, because you don't talk about it. So I guess that's what I was leaning towards, because I've been in that situation, not, you know, being evicted or anything like that, but just not sitting down to the table and saying, all right, we spent a lot of money these past few months, or we're spending way over what we should. So, you know, just around the your finances being quote unquote dysfunctional.
I don't think any man should ever be in the situation where they just don't know. I understand. I mean, it's a tough opinion, but, you know, I'm of the opinion that, you know, all men essentially should be handling the finances in their house, you know, just for that important reason, you know, because finances are the leading cause for divorce, and that's not something that I think you want to just kind of defer. So I think if you are in a situation where you know, bills and the budget is out of hand, and, you know, you're coming in and, you know, the electricity, you know, being wasted, and, you know, the furnace is still running and kicking, and, you know what I'm saying, and you're kind of wondering, okay, well, why are we breaking budget? I mean, I think the first thing you got to do is look at yourself and say, well, what is my hand? You know what I mean? What am I really doing? What efforts am I really putting up towards, you know, making sure that one, if not the important, most important aspect of my family is in line? So I'd say I don't anticipate, I'm not married yet, but I don't anticipate that being my problem.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, I definitely, it was my issue. You know, because I didn't want to tell the wife that, yo, you know, we're spending a little too much. I was really enjoying the spending, you know. And, you know, lately we've been, you know, back on track. And it feels a lot better, and we're more disciplined now. Whereas before, we were just living it up, you know. And, you know, granted, we didn't have to worry about, you know, the electricity getting cut off or anything like that. But we were definitely, you know, not doing what we were supposed to do financially, you know, just because, I mean, it was really no reason other than fault of my own. I was enjoying it. You know, I was enjoying not being tied, you know, to looking at a spreadsheet, you know, or whatever. I was like, man, this is great. You know, I can go and get this and get that and just not even look at it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I can actually say I do the bills in my house, but every once in a while, I'll slip up and go through a
you wanted to get dysfunctional. Yeah, on purpose.
And it's not on purpose. It's just somehow, you know, you got sales going on at the time. You done paid the bills. And you got, oh, I got this little extra. Let me go ahead on and get it. We good.
Exactly.
And the wife was like, we good. And it was funny because, you know, we get ready to go away now. So it was like, oh, Lord, do we have enough money? You know, the other week, we done ate out every day. You know, with the Valentine's parties, and we done did all this stuff. Now it's time to look at this thing and make sure we got enough money just to go away this weekend, because we got to pay that bill, that hotel fee, the gas, and make sure we have enough for food down there, and then make sure we still have enough. It's the end of the month to go into next month and prepare for those bills. So,
exactly.
You know, the wife is at it, and I'm saying, yeah, yeah, it's okay. And then and here I am, 1 o'clock in the morning, checking the bank, make sure.
Right.
So I understand exactly what you're going through, man. Slip up every once in a while.
But let me ask you a question, man, because those just sound like, you know, normal things in a household. Doesn't sound like either one of those are dysfunctional. You know, if, you know, like, let's say you have one parent working, and then you have children in the house, and then the father might be spend his money portion on alcohol or the nightclub, and the mom might spend it on playing bingo, whatever the case may be, and then the bills are being neglected, and the kids' health and things that they need, you know, for their well-being is being neglected. I think there's a lot of that going on, too, where there isn't, you know, a deep pot where, you know, you say, okay, well, we went shopping, but we'll just replenish it next week. You know, I think there's a lot of situations right now with the unemployment rate being where it is, where people have to just figure out how to get by. You know, they say, okay, we either have electric bill paid or groceries, you know, one or the other. I think those are more the lines of dysfunctional households and how people are getting by with less.
See, I don't see that as dysfunctional. See, I see that as, you know, I think you can have a functional household and, you know what I mean, have one member who's bringing in the income, but it's not enough to cover all your normal expenses. But, I mean, if you realize, hey, well, it's either the grocery bill or it's the light bill, I mean, that's, to me, that sounds like functionality. I mean, that's I mean, it sounds like you're playing it. I think it's when you get to the point where, you know, you're dysfunctional when you don't know, you have no grasp of, you know, of priorities or of you know, what should or what should not be paid, or, you know what, you know, I've been overextended for the past 3 years and I didn't even know it. But I mean, I think you cannot have enough money to cover all of the necessities, but as long as you know it and as long as you're prioritizing, I mean, that sounds like functionality to me.
Good words.
Real good words. Anybody else want to take a stab at that? Well, good. This is getting better and better, fellas. Yeah, that's finances on the home. Let's get to the wives. This is powerful right here. The way our wives keep the home. If there's, you know, there's been a lot of arguments. There's, you know, almost marriage breakers because the wife doesn't clean up the way you wanted to clean up, or you don't clean up the way she wants you to clean up, and you have arguments on cleaning up. Has anybody had that issue? I know one person, and they said, you know, they get in trouble for not washing the pots at night. So, you know what I mean?
I think we more often have the latter, where, you know, it's not clean like they would have it to clean. You know, I would hope, you know, maybe, you know, but I'm wrong. But I would think that it's not clean to their satisfaction. You know, and in their world, in their mind, they see, you know, something out of place. Oh, this house is a mess. When it's, you know, it's like just one little toy or something, you know. So I don't know. I think, you know, we more deal with the latter on that, Mr. Host.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and since you made a left turn and you just 4x4'd right down my street.
I'm sitting in your driveway.
you know, you done crashed through my garage. So I'm going to go ahead and, yeah. One of my responsibilities is to wash the pots, but I don't think, you know, I don't think that, you know, because, you know, I may not wash them on a Wednesday or a Tuesday because I'm on the call, that, you know, that would make us dysfunctional. You know, it would definitely cause some drama, but, you know, we'd still be functional. Good one.
That was good. Anybody else have any issues with wives and the way the home is kept? I know that a few weeks ago we had somebody on the call that was upset just because their wives would not leave the door locked. And it ended up being a real, real, real issue. To the point where there was silence in the home. It's because they were mad at each other because the door wasn't locked. Because the man felt one way because he was thinking safety. And the wife was, this is my home, I'm comfortable. And if I left the door, it wasn't like I meant to leave the door unlocked. I'm just comfortable at home.
Well, I have something a little different. I think it can get kind of dysfunctional with the wife when as a man or as the head of the house, when there's disciplinary actions at hand and when it involves a girl or daughter or how you discipline or how you speak in a manner and how they have a tendency of rising up against what actions you believe that are necessary, you know. So I think it can get kind of dysfunctional to that degree because they don't always agree with our methods, you know. So, I mean, I find that to be a problem sometimes.
Yeah, that is a huge problem that it's usually not discussed that before the kids are even brought in. about
Absolutely.
And that goes with the dysfunction because somebody has probably had that in their growing up. Like if let's say the man wants to use not force but some discipline with the belt.
Absolutely.
And the mama's like, no, don't do it. And it could be maybe because he got caught with the belt a couple of times.
And I believe that
she didn't
want
to raise her kids with the belt.
Yeah, and I believe my daughter to this day is very dysfunctional because she's never been made to be responsible when I've always preached responsibility. But it just seemed to be a little different when it comes to girls, you know. And you know, I have a 30-year-old, man, you know, still at home, still not paying bills, still not doing things, you know. I mean, it's crazy. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, and I deal with it a little bit, too. And you're right, if we look back and try to reevaluate our households,
sure.
I can sit down and look at the fact that, you know, I got married, I brought my daughter into it, my wife brought her daughter into it, and cross-discipline has always been an issue in my household. And discipline is definitely necessary when you have teenagers, especially girls, because, you know, for guys like us, our girls will try to run us over. And there's been certain issues where I would have to hold my tongue or I couldn't say certain things to her child, you know. And then there was times where she wouldn't say anything to my child in reference to discipline. She would just, you know, refer it to me, you know. And that's extremely dysfunctional because if there's two adults in the house and there's two children in the house, that's what it is. We're adults. We have certain rights that they don't have. And we should be able to, at any particular time, enforce some discipline. You know, you don't have to wait for me to get home to handle the situation. And I shouldn't have to wait for you to get home to handle the situation. You know what I mean?
You,
so
you nailed it, man. You nailed it because that's exactly what it is. And it's on the same case here. It's a stepchild. You see, or I want to call it stepchild, but I'm just telling you, man, when it comes down to that and when there's disciplinary action that is involved, and let me tell you, as long as they are the parent, the one who birthed that child, and biologically they're not yours, man, trust me, the whole game changes.
Whole game. Yeah. And that brings up a good point, man, that the way we discipline our kids, because even with the man is in the home or if the man is outside the home trying to provide discipline to a child sees that as an advantage.
No question.
Because there's no team in husband and wife. There's no unity.
Yeah.
So
straight division.
Right.
Absolutely. Straight division. Straight division, man, and trust me, and they play odds against the middle, believe me. And they know they're doing it, okay? And as long as mama allow it, it's going to be their way out.
For sure. And they'll milk it.
Absolutely.
They will milk it, and while your hands are tied.
Yes.
You know, and then you got situations where you have, it's not, you know, it's a biological child with both parents. And one father needs to be a father, and the mom is, like, standing in the way, like, no, 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 no. No,
yeah.
No, 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 no. You know, don't do this, don't do that, and don't talk to him that way, and he don't need to be punished, and this, that, and the other. You know what I mean? So then that's dysfunctional as well, too.
Yeah.
But then they want you to step in after she gets assaulted by him years later, right?
Exactly. They get locked up or something. They call you to get the bail money and go get them out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and you raise them with no responsibility, you know, no guidelines, no obedience, no nothing. You know, so that's probably what's bound to happen at that point.
Yeah. I'm going to give y'all I don't want to talk y'all to death, but I'm going to give y'all a serious dysfunctional situation. Nothing funny about it. It's a serious situation, you know. but it's not about, you know, the wife. But what it's more, say it was my mother. Okay, my mother had responsibility for my brother's children. They were out of control, dysfunctional to the utmost. No matter what they did, she always made excuses for him. Well, you know he's on medicine. Oh, you know he's not right. Oh, you know he's not this. You know she's not that. You know, all she knows is that. And for years and years and years, I talked to her, and explained to her, you need to allow those children to grow up. And the same, and one of the same children that she covered, and continued to cover it and cover it and cover it, got into an argument with my mother one day. My mother had a heart attack, went to the hospital, and passed away a week later. You know, my family was ready to kill him. Kill him. But in the same sense, what I'm saying is that as long as you condone something, you allow it to go on and go on and go on, and it's so dysfunctional. But then my brother wasn't any better in the situation, because the way he handled his children, he handled them with discipline. Girl or boy, it didn't matter. They were wrong. He physically beat them and body slammed them. Okay, I'm being honest with you. You know, so it was straight dysfunctionality. You know, so like I said, it could be generation, could be passed on. So
for sure,
I'm just telling you. You know, some things you can't allow to go on. Some things you can't allow to continue on and pacify it, because eventually it'll come back and it'll bite you, you know. And
that's a true statement, man, because that goes into why this call is so powerful, is that what we see growing up sometimes is what we do, because that's all we know.
Absolutely.
And that's why this call, Head of Household, on this website, on this talk show virtual call for men, is very, very important, because sometimes we got to get serious, and this is a serious topic, is that when does it stop? When does that generational gap of what we saw when we were growing up stop? It has to stop with us, meaning that we have to look in the mirror and make those changes, because we know that our women look at us, but they also look at our family too. So if they know that our fathers beat our mothers.
Oh, yeah.
In the back of their mind, your wife's mind, especially if they've seen it and it's still going on, that you may have that gene. And that even though you haven't done it, that you have that capability of doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And because that's in the back of your mind, could that make her hesitate on doing things, or getting to a point where you're irritable, which will make you dysfunctional? Because kids can see everything. They may not realize it at the time, but they notice when something is not right.
I can definitely second that. I mean, I'm in the process, probably soon to be engaged, but one of the things that struck me first about the woman I'm dating is that she hates cooking. I mean, absolutely hate it.
You want to talk about dysfunction now?
No, to me, that's just like, that's not okay. My mom has always been, I mean, a superb cook. I mean, and she's like, well, I can't live up to that. And I'm like, well, babe, you don't cook at all. So, I mean, it's not even a comparison. And, you know, through further, you know, research, you know, I found out that her father was so anal when it came to cooking. I mean, to the point where, you know, when the mother would cook for him, you know, if she brought the plate to him with the green beans on the wrong side of it, or the plate, or the, you know, the fork and the knife, you know, on the wrong side of the plate, you know, he would, you know, get mad and scream. And so she resented her father so much that, you know, she wouldn't cook.
Wow.
And so, you know, when it came to me, you know, I had to, you know, kind of talk and, you know, to her, be compassionate and, you know, offer to cook with her. I, you know, say, baby, we can learn together. And so, you know, we're taking steps, and, you know, each week we vow to cook something different. But, you know, it was crazy. Like, that's almost a make or break issue for me. Like, nah, you got to be able to cook. And, you know, she just resented her father so much that she refused to cook for anybody or to learn. So I can relate.
Wow, good words.
And those are good words. And just to go back to what Patrice was just saying, I kind of believe that, I mean, we all know the definition of insanity. And I just think that it's borderline insane, man, when we grow up in a household where we watch an abusive father abuse our mom and sometimes abuse us as well. And then we turn around and take that into a new marriage. You know, the one thing that we hated the most, that we turn around and do it ourselves. I mean, how can you expect a different result by repeating the same actions? You know, so I mean, you're right. We have to end that generational curse at some point. But I think it would be a little bit more obvious to us that we didn't like it growing up. So why are we doing it now ourselves?
Yeah. But to some folks, it's a gene.
That's like saying, you know, we didn't like it growing up, but why do we do it now? Exactly what you said. It's almost like there's a lot of things in life that we don't like, but we do it anyway, and we know that it's not good regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can remember being a child, you know, and my father let me taste alcohol. And I'm like, man, this is the most disgusting stuff in the world. Burnt my chest and everything. I said, man, I don't want no parts of that. Then you go to college and you start drinking alcohol. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, we know we didn't like it, but then here we are repeating the same thing over and over again. And it seems like it would be a no-brainer, but sometimes it's just not.
Right.
Yeah. That's true.
Wow.
That
it's
is
like, you know, drugs will kill you, but you do it anyway.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
anyway.
If you grow up, and I mean, I have friends where I've gone to their houses, but I just do my young years, and they had a kid, and you don't pay no attention to it at the time, but you know, you're at the table, everybody playing cards, smoke is all around, you know, chronic in the air, beer on the table, you know, dogs running around, kids in the Pampers. They just enjoy themselves. They don't know any better. They think that's what they're supposed to be. There's a thing that I tell my kids all the time. When grown folks talking, stop talking. Stop trying to get in the conversation. You know, when we were growing up, I couldn't even be in the room. Go play.
Yeah, we still be listening, though.
Yeah, we still be listening, but it's just the respect thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what makes our houses dysfunctional is that we have lost respect in our own home.
Yeah, and I think, too, that dysfunctional is subjective. Like, what's dysfunctional to you may not be dysfunctional to somebody else. And I think that's the problem, you know, whereas, you know, somebody could say, oh, man, you know, it's cool. You know, we're just smoking and playing cards with a little beer with the baby running around. That's not dysfunctional, you know. I mean, really, some people say, hey, you know, the baby's not running around outside, so, you know, they're running around in here, so it's fine. You know, I think dysfunctionality is subjective.
Right about that.
And that's where we need to, you know, I guess, you know, get some clarity on what is, you know, this being a dysfunctional household. I think we mentioned, you know, not having two parents in the household, because ideally, you know, we strive for the ideal, even though we live in the real. Ideally, we want mom and dad, you know, and you know, just like the Beavers or whatever, that's the ideal situation. But, you know, we know everybody's situation is not like that. But, you know, that is, you know, I guess the crux of, you know, what we're talking about this evening is, you know, just defining different levels of dysfunctionality. And, you know, I just pointed to one example there. But, you know, I think that, you know, dysfunctional, you know, it's subjective. You know, like I give you an example, whereas my kids, I don't listen to the radio with them. You know, I don't listen to PGC or, you know, nothing against PGC or, you know, the other station, KYS. I do not listen to those stations with my kids in the car because their minds are impressionable. So if somebody's talking about birthday sex or, you know, whatever they're talking about, I mean, you imagine how a little six-year-old or two-year-old mind is. I mean, those words are just going in, you know, where somebody else, they, you know, their kids know the lyrics to birthday sex and the same age as mine.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think that's the difference here is that, you know, is what's dysfunctional to me may not be dysfunctional to somebody else. And the point is that we may not even know, you know, what's dysfunctional or not. You know, I do, but, you know, in some cases, everybody may not know, oh, man, I probably shouldn't have my first grader listening to this radio station.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you have to protect their ears, man. You have to protect what they hear. You know, anything outside of that can be borderline dysfunctional, too, and it's detrimental to you as a father because it's going to come back and bite you later. You're going to have to deal with it later. You know what I'm saying? So you might as well try to, you know, defend it from them right now.
And even on the standpoint of, like, the TV programs we watch, you know, we try to watch, you know, the you know, kid-friendly TV. For example, a football game. Now, the football game is fine. But when they go to the commercials and they talking about Viva Viagra, ED, Levitra, you know, beer flowing, you know, girls in the bar, I mean, it's just out of control. I mean, the actual football game, it's fine. You know, we can all watch that as a family. But as soon as the commercials hit, yo, you ready to go upstairs? Oh, let me grab my pill. You know, I mean, it's like, why should I have to explain this? You know, Dad, what's Viagra? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I think it gets more and more challenging, I guess, in today's world. We just have to, kind of just be mindful of that, you know, that no, I do not want to explain or have to explain, you know, what Viagra is to my six-year-old.
You don't.
Mm. Yeah, but there's a flip side to that, too, though. There's a flip side to that, too. And let me ask you a question. Is leaving the explanation up to somebody else dysfunctional as well?
Mm. Yes, yes, yes. Good word.
You see what I'm saying? Because if we don't tell them, somebody gonna tell them.
Yep.
Somebody else may tell them. Their definition might be not one that you want to, you know, deal with your child. So you know, it might be best for us to just say, okay, well, this little blue pill. This, you know, and just break it down.
Oh man, good words. Because somebody on the playground gonna tell them anyway. So.
Exactly.
I'd rather
exactly.
be me, you know, to tell them
exactly.
the real deal.
I think, Rodney. Yeah,
oh,
I think. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go
yeah.
ahead.
Yeah.
I think you know, I agree with Rodney in saying that it's subjective to the extent of the individual family. So dysfunctional. I mean, I guess if you look at functional, it just simply means that it's working, right? So dysfunctional would mean that more or less it's not working. So if it doesn't work, it's dysfunctional. So, you know, if you got, I mean, without going to the extreme, I didn't hear all the different cases that were being presented. But if you're talking about dysfunction, you're talking about, you know, the whole Viagra thing and the sex conversations and things of that nature. Yeah, some people might have it in their house. Some people might not. Now, just because you have it in yours don't mean that the kids in the other house are going to, you know, put out 9 kids before, you know, 20, being a little exaggerated. But nonetheless, you got to deal with your own house. You can't necessarily dictate to your neighbor's house or saying they're doing it wrong because they're not doing it your way. Now, of course, if you go to the extreme, we can clearly define some general dysfunctions. I think that would cover everyone's house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the extreme dysfunctions, molestation and things like there's just, you know, you can go all the way to the extreme with some of that stuff. But since we're not really talking extreme, or maybe we are, but in dealing with our own houses, certain things that haven't, does it work?
I mean, I look at my son in particular, or my daughter, either one, but, you know, certain things work for him that don't work for the girls. So, you know, by definition, I guess I can look at it and say, well, that's dysfunctional because that doesn't work for her, but it works for him. So it's subjective in that way. So that's why I say I agree with what you're saying.
It works.
But are we a dysfunctional household as a whole? Absolutely. I don't think anyone on the call can say they don't have some dysfunction in their house.
They just want to admit it.
They don't want to admit it, right?
They don't want to admit it. And this brings up some good points. Because before we get to that you know, that 10 after 10 monkey wrench, we got to talk about dysfunction inside our home. Just the arguments that we have in between, you know, with our wives, does that affect anything, you know, our kids? I knew when I was growing up, my parents would have arguments and spell out words. They would spell out the words.
I do that. No, go ahead.
You know, and you be sitting there just trying to think, what was that word that they just spelled? Write that down, and then I'll go and look at the dictionary later and see what it means. But now do we get to the point, I know earlier in my marriage, we would just yell at the top of our lungs at each other. And wake the kids up in the middle of the night. And they are running, oh, Daddy, no, Mama, stop arguing, blah, 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 blah. And it got us to change because, you know, we saw the effect it was having. But some don't change. Does this go under the definition of dysfunctional family?
When you don't change?
Yeah, if you don't change.
Yeah, yelling in front of your kids and arguing and screaming and hollering, I mean, I'd say that's dysfunctional.
Because that goes into the next thing, and that's domestic violence. We all know what arguing leads to.
I think it goes back to did it work? you know, did your relationship get any better? Did the kids understand what a relationship was any better? How husband and wife is supposed to perform, how mommy and daddy is supposed to act. Did it work on any level? I think the answer would probably be no.
Yeah.
For us, it worked.
For you, it worked?
Yeah, we were able to explain it. And in explaining, it also made us say, oh, we shouldn't do this. You know, we need to go argue. We need to go upstairs and go behind closed doors. And we don't need to raise our voice. We should be able to.
But would that really be considered working? You had to yell and traumatize the kids to understand that wasn't the right thing to do?
Hey. Their reaction. I don't know. I'm assuming that their reaction made us change.
Okay.
So it worked in the effect that it made you change. I think that's
right.
What you're getting at.
Yeah.
Okay.
What Rodney was saying was, did that yelling and hollering and all that stuff, did it work in your relationship?
No. We still had to
hit.
But the point is we
used the word traumatized, too. Traumatized.
Traumatized. I was like, whoa, I need to check this out.
Wow.
But, yeah, anybody want to elaborate on kids and watching their parents argue? Because isn't that the reason why, you know, it's very quick for your spouse to get mad at you, argue at you right at that point in time? Because that's what they saw when they were growing up, and that's what they think, that's how you solve a conflict, is by arguing.
Let me throw this out there, going along the lines of what you're talking about, but on the flip side, from a functional standpoint, not saying that the household I grew up in was, you know, completely functional. Again, I don't think any household is completely functional. But And I think someone just mentioned this a little earlier about a family that a mom and dad didn't do certain things in front of the kids. This is how my mom and dad were and still are. But all the did the yelling and stuff take place? Later down the road, I'm starting to hear it. Later in life, I'm hearing some of the things that took place, and I'm like, really? Kids, you weren't allowed in the same room. When grown folks were talking, you had to go outside. Don't keep coming running in and out because the conversation was running for you. And they had drama. I never knew growing up. And it sure has helped me, and from a functional standpoint, me growing up, now being an adult, having my own house to kind of manage. And, I'll get upset at my wife, but I won't kirk out, flip out, whatever, in front of the kids to show them that this is what's going on. She won't do it either. And her house was a little different growing up, but she won't do it either. But that's from a functional standpoint, I think that stems from. In a dysfunctional household, I think a lot of that stuff follows you into your household when you're able to get into a household. That's why I was kind of saying with the kids, did it work? Because did the kids really get the message on how you're supposed to handle disputes, not only as adults, but in a relationship?
I would say I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I got a boy and a girl, and sometimes they're happy 1 minute, and the next minute they don't want to be bothered with each other. The next minute they fussing at each other. And then sometimes they get loud themselves. I think I done screwed my kids up, man. But you just watch them and you're like, you cannot do that to your sister or you cannot do that to your brother. You can't, you shouldn't be talking to them that way. And I don't see them getting it from anywhere else. They could be getting it from school. I don't know. I'm not there, but.
Right.
They're at the age of 10 and 7 now where they're starting to express themselves and they're doing it in an argumentative way sometimes when they don't want
right.
to bother.
Yeah, and that aspect of the scenario I was given, that aspect of functionality, that being able to be a functional relationship, when it was time for me to step up and be a head of household, that just kind of flowed from my past. Now, there's other things that flowed from my past too, because now my dad and my mom weren't very romantic in any way. At least, never seen them, kind of hugging or just kissing on each other in the kitchen, while dinner's being cooked or any of the stuff. Some of the stuff that me and my wife do now, in front, we'll do it in front of the kids. Nothing nasty, nothing dirty, but just showing love to each other. Didn't see a lot of that. So, since you're thinking about where that might have came from, I don't know where that actually came from because I didn't see that growing up. I guess that just came out of life itself. But the functioning part of my mom and my dad's relationship, I was able to learn from. It's what I've seen in the past, and it worked. And that's kind of what I do. I don't like doing that stuff in front of the kids because it just wasn't done, I guess, in my sight. Now, if the tables were flipped and it was some dysfunction in that area, I don't know. Maybe I would be doing it today. Maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. But like I said, I think I'd have to ask myself, does it work? Whatever I'm doing, does it work? Not only with me and my wife in front of the kids, but with me and my wife, period. Is that working? Maybe us yelling at each other, the silent treatments, the go in the other room, those type of things. Does it work?
Right.
Am I really getting out of what I want?
Wow.
Good words.
Good ones. Good ones. All right. So here we go. Here we go. Moving on. Here's the first real monkey wrench of the day. As head of household, it's our fault that our boys are graduating from high school only 30% of our time. Is it the head of household's fault that education is not first in our kids' life?
Yes, because education is not cool in some respects. Because I know that I have girls, and I know that Tony said it's going to change. But, my little girl, is really in the school. You know, if she gets anything less than the whatever, they don't have A's and B's, but if she gets anything less than a quote unquote A, you know, she's upset. You know, and I'm just like, hey, you know, just do better next time. But I think that it's easier, you know, with girls for them to be smart. And, you know, y'all can help me out, those that have teenage girls and boys, but it's not cool for teenage guys to be smart. You know, and I know I was smart, and I was cool too, though, but, I was different. But, you know, but I think that the reality is that it's really not cool for boys to be smart. You know, you're a nerd. You're a geek. You're square. That's what you're called. Whereas girls, is, you know, they're not really, you know, they are affected by that, but not as much. You know, maybe I can get somebody to agree or disagree with that.
I don't know, man. Girls go through emotions. They go through an emotional change. So what you're probably getting right now is that change. When things get a little harder, they are tended to need that more. You can do it, you know, just keep it in his books type of prep talk, because their emotions get involved in their educational growth. Where a guy, you have to watch him. You know, a guy, you won't know until his grades come home. You'd be like, hey, it seemed like you were doing good. What happened? and the next thing you know, you gotta get beat down, because you know it's pretty different. Because I treat my daughter a little bit different when it comes to education than I do with my son.
And why is that?
Because it's like you said, you know, my daughter is very into her books. She, you know, sometimes she tries to, she's at that age now, get ready to hit that 1-0, and she wants to do all these other things. So now I'm like, all right, you got to stay in your books. You got to stay in your books. You got to keep your books first. You know, don't be talking about these boys in school. Don't be talking about, you know, girls are going to, you know, get jealous of you. That's that emotional side, because the girls are getting jealous of you. And you get to that point in that age, teenagers, where they're making decisions based on the environment they want to get part of, what type of friends they want to be around. So you're trying not only talk about their work, but keep them in a good surrounding, that they don't follow the wrong crowd. Well, the boy, you got to do that at the beginning. Quentin walked in this house, and in my day, first thing I ask him is, because they still get colors at his age, next year he'll get grades.
Mm-hmm.
So first, I don't even have to say nothing. I look at him, and I know when he didn't get that green, because first thing you do, he put that head down. And there's a rule in my house, because I have to tell him that, one, he is a male. Two, when he gets to the third grade, because most African-American men come from dysfunctional homes, a lot of people don't know, but it's documented, that they take statistical stats from the third and fifth grade up to the fifth grade. The reason why they have tests for those kids is for the males, the black males, and the Hispanics. That's how they find out how many more prisons they need to create in America. From grade 3 and 5. That's where they take the statistical stats. So from the grade, third grade on, as a male, you're already set for failure, because they already building a prison for you to be stationed at based on your grades you got in the third grade. To me, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Me, that's ridiculous. So I got to stay on him from the jump. My daughter comes home and says, oh, Daddy, I got a 10. We good. You know, I need help with my work. She'll come right there and say, hey, Dad, I need to work. But Quentin, he's the same way. He'll get his work, but you got to watch his his demeanor in class, because Quentin is quick to go with the crowd. Oh, they was playing, so I rolled over there and wanted to play too. And he'll, you know, I'll be like, listen, but you can't do everything everybody else is doing. You got to learn how to be your own boy, own man. And the first thing you do is make sure that you don't bring no yellow, because he gets in trouble if he brings a yellow, which is just only a warning. I don't play warning. If she got to talk to you one time, that means you done messed up. That means you weren't focused and you weren't in your book. My wife gets on me all the time. It's like, he just got a warning. You don't have to knock him out every single time he got a warning. You can just talk to him. And I'm like, no. And he needs to understand from a man's point of view that they look at him differently than they will any other boy out there. And I'm not going to allow him to go down that path. And I think that's where we're missing in these young boys. And that's why they're getting in trouble younger now than they were years back when they were just getting in trouble 16, 17, and 18. It's because the fathers have left the home. The home, the mother can be doing the best she can, but the home is dysfunctional because that father has left out that part of that man's life, that little boy's life. And that is very, very important at this age. It is. At least that's my thought of it. I may be wrong, but Quentin's going to get knocked out every time he bring home a yell. I can guarantee you that. Anybody else want to bring that, talk about it?
I think you just kind of hit it on the hit the nail on the coffin. I mean, the answer is yes, absolutely. Anytime you know your child, if your child isn't succeeding, or specifically if your son is performing you know, not up to standard in you know, in school, and the house is dysfunctional because of it. I mean, the man's the head of the household for a reason. So, essentially, you know what I'm saying, you got to look at yourself. You got to look at, you know, your responsibility. And I think you got to take it by any means necessary. You know, understanding that education, you know, I mean, that's the foundation. I mean, you got your home. You know, of course, you know, that's where it starts. You know, that the child is going to act a certain way, or is going to act in school basically how he's taught to act, you know, at home. So, you know, he or she has got to be checked while they're at home. So if they're not doing, you know, what they're supposed to be doing at school, well, and, and they have both parents hopefully in the house, and, you know, if they're acting up in school, it's because they're not getting, you know, what most likely is because they're not getting the attention, or they're not getting the discipline that they're supposed to be getting at home. Ultimately, that I think the man is held accountable for that.
Yeah. I think so. Anybody else want to elaborate on that? Anybody got kids that want to talk about them?
Chime in on that just to say that even if the man is not in the home, you know, say via separation or divorce or whatever the case may be, they have to take that same attitude as you brothers just explained, is that, you know, when you are around them, say, hey, you know, what kind of, you see what your grades are, you know, how you doing, and, you know, and all that good stuff. I think you still have to, you know, just find a way, you know, to maximize that time and to make sure that they're focused in, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can sort of see that when, you know, that weekend father or whatever the case may be, that's the time, you know, that's fun time. You know, I haven't seen my son all week, you know, and you really don't want to come down too hard, you know, by, hey, let me check your books, you know, bring your book bag here, you know. So I think that you can sort of, you know, just be mindful of, you know, that fact that it's, I mean, you're still that child's father, so, I mean, you still got to come with it, you know, even though you're not necessarily in that home. I mean, that's your responsibility, and, you know, I think that probably the easiest thing is just to take the easy road and take them to get ice cream or, you know, take them to the amusement park and, you know, do those kind of things rather than be that you know, hard nose on them, you know, like Patrice was saying. So
you're right. I mean, hey, you know, let's just think about it. Can I be honest? What's in the news right now? Tiger Woods. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Tiger was grown up in a successful family. His father taught him at the age of 3 discipline and work ethic. From the age of 3, you know, the father was there. Made sure he got the great grades so he can go to Stanford and get the great education and use his talents and his gift in golf to get through his life. But do you think there was one thing that his father left out? Because I think we make mistakes, even if we're in the home,
mm-hmm.
that we still do make mistakes because we haven't been in that position before. So we're doing things off of what we expect, we want out of our children. But he forgot to teach. And you see this a lot when it comes to sports and groupies and women and men.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of an open-ended comment because he might not have forgotten. Maybe that's where he got it from in the first place. He might have taught him the wrong thing.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
Yeah.
He might have been paying attention.
Could he just follow the wrong path?
Well, I'm saying his dad, like Tony just said, he might have been paying attention to his dad because maybe he got it from his dad. Maybe that was a part of his dad that just wasn't so great. And I say that using that term because of you know, that's the term that's always associated with his achievements.
Mm-hmm.
The Tiger's so great and everything, but his dad might have been showing him how to be great on the golf course, but he also might have been showing him some other stuff. Now, maybe not purposely, but nonetheless, you know, Tiger could have seen. Just don't know. I don't know anyway. But
yeah, I mean, that's one of those ones that
we
probably would never know about, but that's something that we grow up seeing. Sometimes
right.
our father is a Rolling Stone.
Right. So we don't want to be one-sided on, that's all.
Right, yeah. right. And I just wanted to open up dialogue for
mm-hmm.
that. I needed somebody to correct me, but the whole point of it is that even though we're in the home and we're doing our job, we try to still live our life too, but are we being watched? So when we are being a Rolling Stone and we're out there coming home.
Sure, I think from for whether from a son's perspective or a girl's perspective, because the girls are watching just like the boys are watching in a different view, you know, kind of the same scene, like two security cameras, but they're looking at it from a different view. So, like, I have a son and 2 daughters, and my son is right on point in what was being said earlier, that his demeanor doesn't change at all. It's kind of like, you know, either the emails you get from the teacher or a conference with the teacher, or it's when the report card comes home. You can't tell. He's not emotional about it or not. I mean, he could, not that he has, but, you know, he can flunk out of every class, and his demeanor would be the same if he got all A's.
Mm-hmm.
But my one daughter, absolutely very emotional, and just like I think Rodney pointed out to his daughter, is she gets very upset. She has a 4.0 grade point average. She graduates this year from high school, and she gets very upset if her grades are going low. She has a job now, but at one point she had another job, and her grades started slipping just a tad. We never seen it, but she saw what she did on a couple of quizzes or whatever, and she quit. She said, I can't do it, because she was very emotional about it. Now, the oldest one, on the other hand, who will be 21 in a couple of weeks, she did bad early on in school. And in her 10th grade year, just to be with her class, she had to take day and night classes and summer school classes to do 3 years in one.
Wow.
And she played around all those other years and finally buckled down and got serious about it. And and did all those years in one, then ended up going to Morgan State. Now she's down at FAU in Florida, but, you know, kind of changed it around 180 in a matter of a year, really. So I guess it kind of goes back to each one of these kids are kind of individual, and even though you can look at them by gender and say, you know, boys this and boys and girls that, which we can do generally, but still individually, that child is yours, and you're going to have to look at it from an individual basis, not from a consensus basis around the country or around the world about young black boys or young ladies or what have you. And we're going to have to look at our children as opposed to looking at it from a textbook. We got to look at them from who they are.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because I got the next monkey wrench. I got the 1230, the 1036 monkey wrench. I want to be just like my father, so I'm going to beat up my high school girlfriend.
Huh?
Exactly.
Wow.
There is a lot of cases, if you go online and look, where there's a lot of domestic violence in the high school level, where teenagers are beating up, the male teenagers are beating up these young girls. Daily.
That could be fathers, but also within the society that we live in, a very violent society, and there's a lot of factors, I guess. And yes, it starts in the home, but you know, so a lot of the music is just pure violence. If you listen to any of it, it's pure anger.
Yeah,
and
this is traumatizing women, girls' lives. These are our babies that we're growing up with, and they're getting beat at a teenager. What's going to affect? How to affect are they going to be as a good wife? If they're going through a dysfunctional domestic violence relationship as a young child, when they get to their 20s and 30s, you know. And the parents are looking at it like, oh, he didn't mean it. And the parents aren't doing anything because they're scared of the kids.
Mm.
You know, parents are scared of their own kids now.
That's definitely a dysfunctional household, if in fact. Because we live in a society where, you know, men are trying to be women trying to be men, kids are trying to be adults, and most adults trying to be, or not most, but a lot of adults trying to be kids again. You know, I see a lot of 40-year-old, 50-year-old men with, you know, throwback jerseys and Timberlands and, you know, look like 16-year-olds. And I'm saying to myself, grow up. And I hope I'm saying this right, because I know some brothers on here, maybe, you know, they still do the B-boy look, and hey, to each his own. But there's a difference from the individuals that I'm talking about, say, have nothing going on for their life, and that's them. And the brother that I believe that I'm talking to on the phone, I hope I'm talking to on the phone, also from some of the brothers that I have talked to on the phone, that they are professionals. And so, you know, you do have another side of you. This is what you like to dress down. This is how you get comfortable, whatever. But I'm talking about those individuals that this is their everyday routine. To be, you know, just trying to be in at 50 years old, you got all this gray hair, bald head, not because you shaved it, because it fell out. And you got this B-boy 16 look going on, an attitude to go along with it. And
so you're saying the men are out here trying to act like they're younger than what they are.
Exactly. I mean, I'm talking about the different chaos that's in the. You got these kids who are trying to run the houses, and that in itself is dysfunctional.
Yes. If the man is not there, then the kids are running the house.
Mm-hmm.
And if the kids are seeing other men coming in their house and beating up on their mothers, what do you think they're going to do to your kids? I'll give you a good example. I was in college, and boyfriend, girlfriend in college, they were hanging out, you know. And there was a party one night. He was messing with another girl. They got in an argument. He literally beat her. good girl, family, two-parent household, and he really beat her where she was in the hospital. She had to go to the hospital. He was drinking, and he went back to the place. He wakes up, and here's a knock at the door, 6 a.m. in the morning. Now, this girl was from Connecticut. We in school in Virginia. And he thinks it's one of his roommates, so he just opens the door and turns around. And they, I guarantee you, his daddy, the daddy, was right there at that door at 6 a.m. in the morning. And he was on life for a couple weeks. That's where I think we need to get back to as fathers. Is making sure, I'm not saying take matters in our own hands, but if you're a young man and you put your hands on this little daughter that's in this house, I'll find me another job because I'm getting ready to go and handle some shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is missing today. Even, you know, your daughter is 30 years old, she's been married 15 years, and the husband puts his hands on her. And then he tries to come and says, well, she threw something at me and I accidentally hit her. I can't even let that go. You know, because the rule is you do not put your hands on a woman. Unless it's in a little sexual manner and you just, you know, as Tony put it last week, just giving a little spank. But that's
funny. Yeah, even if that happens, I don't even want to hear about that. From a father.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
And I think that now as fathers with daughters, we have to make it our business to let whoever it is in their life, whatever male figure that our daughters have in their life, let them know she does have a father. And there is, you know, males in her life. So when you act up, it's just not going to be, okay, nothing's going to go down. You know what I mean? There is somebody that's going to confront you about your actions. And a lot of times these guys they treat these young girls as if they don't have brothers and as if they don't have fathers and as if nothing can happen to them. You know what I mean? So we have to make it our business to let them know, no, she does have a father or a brother or a male that is concerned with her safety and her well-being. And if you get out of line, it will be addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, on that same line, just to kind of, I mean, not to play devil's advocate, though, I think there's a lot of women out here, you know, having experienced it, you know, coming out of abusive relationship where, you know, you have women who will, you know, try to abuse men too because, you know, I mean, maybe they didn't have a father figure, you know, I mean, in this particular case, you know, the father was there, but he never really disciplined his child. So, I mean, she grew up with a temper. And because she had a temper, she felt like anytime she got mad, she, you know, I mean, she could, you know, throw punches. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if anybody's been hit by a girl, but, you know, when a girl is throwing punches, it can hurt, and you can be forced to defend yourself. Yeah. And so, you know, me, I'm in the position where, no, I didn't hit her, but, you know what I'm saying, I had to grab her, I had to shove her off of me to the point where, you know what I mean, she might have fell to the ground, started complaining, going home, you know, crying to mommy and daddy. And, you know, then, you know, the, you know, or going home crying to her brother, and, you know, her brother, you know, fortunately he knew how she was, and, you know, he knew, you know, that, you know, I wasn't just going to put my hands on her for no reason. But, you know, I just say that to say that as fathers, I think that, you know, at times we get caught up in disciplining the son and just excusing everything that daughters do, and, you know, not realizing that they can grow up and, you know, develop some, you know, really bad habits, some of which might end up getting them hurt. So.
Good words.
Yeah.
No, you're always thinking about the son because he is the head of household. He's going to be the head of household one day. But that goes back to, you know, fathers, is it our fault if we are so focused on our sons and not our daughters? That is a great point. All right, here we go, 10:45. We got about 15 minutes, and then we'll bring it. We can continue this if you would like, or we can go straight into open mic. But is it the head of household's responsibility to get our family to church? Is that the missing piece? Is that, could that be the only missing link from making a family from functional to dysfunctional? Is the church or faith in God? Some type of belief.
Yeah, I like the way you put the last part of that, some type of belief. I hope I don't say this the wrong way, but I don't think it's their responsibility to take them to church. I think it's their responsibility to make sure the church gets in them.
Okay.
Anyone can, you know, grandma can take them to church, or mama can take them to church, or the church bus, van, or what have you can take them to church, because getting them to church don't necessarily, it's helpful, and it's a tool to get that word in them. But I think at home is where that real teaching should take place. It's good to go to church and listen to the song, listen to the sermon. But at home, that lesson, because I know growing up, you know, I went to church multiple times during the week and on Sunday. And maybe I should say I didn't learn anything. I didn't feel that I learned anything. My childhood didn't show that. My young adulthood didn't show that. But at home, the example was there, and I learned a lot from the example than I did the scripture readings on Sunday.
Yeah, good words. And the reason why I ask that question is because we go to church all the time, but you don't see the men volunteering at church as much. You'll see the women volunteer at church, and you'll see the kids come with the women at church. But there's a few of us that work in our church, actually all three of us, Tone, Rodney, and myself. And the ones that the fathers are in the home, you see them every Wednesday and every Sunday at church. But then there's some that drop the kids off and have no dealings. And we're always crying looking for help from men, saying, hey, we got these boys that we're trying to make responsible young men, but we need mentors. We need men. Okay? Women, we can use women to teach a man how to do things. Now, women know how to do a lot of things that men do, but there's some things that has to be taught by men. At least, that's my opinion. And we're missing that. We're missing the mentors from the church. Point of view.
But that goes back to what I said earlier, Patrice, is that just along the lines of school, I mean, it's not cool to be a man and work in the church. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, that's just a reality. Now, I do it, you know, but on the face of it, you know, it's just like with school. You know, you lose some cool points, you know, if you getting straight A's. And I mean, that's just, you know, that's just how the ball bounces. You know, I don't think it's right. You know, I don't necessarily agree with it either, but I just think that is just how it is.
Is that because the men, do you think that's because the men and the church, let's just skip over the boys, the smart guys in school, but do you think that is because the men in church are not cool? Those who are active and doing things in church?
No, I think the label, I think that, you know, those that are not active are worried about the label of not being cool. So that's why they don't participate or get involved, you know, because, like I said, I mean, I do, and, you know, I don't feel that it's uncool, you know, to me, but I think that...
So I'm not saying, you know, whether or not we perceive, because we are the men in the church for the most part, whether we perceive the men are being, are cool or not, but taking ourselves out of ourselves, so to speak, and looking at it from their perspective, if we was, whatever, 16 again, would we perceive ourselves as being cool?
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's a good question.
Because I'm curious on why, because I'm hearing this, you know, saying that, well, because the young, and I'm not disagreeing with it, but the young men, you know, don't think it's cool to be a man being active in church. And like I said, I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm probably very much agreeing with it, but then I have to ask the question then, personally, but then as a group, since some of us are active in the churches, what is it about us that they're not finding cool?
And I think it's probably, you know, like I say, I'm cool because I'm more practical. And I think that a lot of times, you know, the whole, it's how you, you know, relate, you know, to the word and the things of God. I mean, you can't Bible beat people, you know, and that's the thing is where I think that Christianity, you know, as a religion, it can be looked upon as, oh, man, you're not cool because you're a Christian. When it's like, what? You know, you can't have any fun. You know, it's like, come on. You know, and I think that's the label because once, you know, sometimes, you know, once you really get involved, I mean, you become like, oh, you know, well, I'm higher than thou. When it's like, no, you know, you're still a regular person, you know.
I think you said the word. Yeah. I think you said the word, which was relate. I think that's really the fine line for these young guys on whether or not you're cool or not. Can you relate to them? Because who they think are cool has nothing to do with age, because you got some of these guys, some of these rappers or what have you, who are, or singers or whatever, who are our age,
yeah, but,
to be honest. But they find them being cool because they relate to them. How do they relate to them? I think that's maybe, and I know some of us would just dismiss it and say, hey, well, you know, they're a negative image. I'm not going to be negative. I got that. But to some degree, you have to find out what it is, or we have to find out what it is that makes them attractive to these young men and why we are not. And I think if we look at it and just processing it in my head as we talk, and you see these guys who are, and we talked about the B-boy 1 week or 2 weeks ago, and, you know, how they're maybe spontaneous, the life is exciting, it's fun, you know, they have fun, and so forth and so on, and maybe they just see blah, blah, blah from us, or what seems to be blah, blah, blah from them. The routine, nothing out of the norm, you're doing scripture reading, you do the sermon, you do the prayer, you take the offering, and that's all I'm really seeing from you. And it could stem further than that because they don't see us in the neighborhoods or whatever the case is. But I'm just dealing with the church. What are we doing? What do we do that's spontaneous? What is it that we're doing that's exciting? I understand that the word is exciting, again, but we're taking ourselves out of ourselves and looking at it from a 16-year-old standpoint. What is it that's exciting and what is it that's fun? What's attractive about it?
Yeah, I can tell you what Derek online has chatted, and he thinks that, you know, that anybody who's you know, there is no one that is uncool in the church because old people are in the church.
Basically,
I don't think that
says we act old. Go ahead, Tom.
And then he says,
I don't think that it's either. I don't think that it's either. Honestly, I don't think that it's either cool or uncool. That may not be the issue. It's commit your time or not. It's running or unrunning. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people that just haven't found their way yet. So if they haven't found their way, no, they're not gonna volunteer at church. There's some men that, you know, their wives say, hey, you know, take us to church, drop us off, you know, be a chauffeur, because you know they're still running from the word. So you know they that's what they are. They're chauffeurs. Some drop the family off and come back and pick them up, you know, when it's over with, you know. So and then some don't believe in giving back to the community. Some people just don't believe anyway because they still have that, you know, what's the world, you know, owe me, you know what I'm saying? So I don't really think that I could be wrong. It may not be a cool or uncool thing. It's just who wants to stand up and make a difference and who doesn't.
Right. And do you think that there's a lot of men out there who don't trust the church?
A lot of people, period.
That the church is now, some churches are commercial. They're all on TV. They're driving, you know. And so they're cautious.
That was one of the excuses that I used when I was running. I talked about the preachers. I talked about proprietary, whatever you want to call it. Just, you know, all those things is what I talked about. You know, the preachers with the private jets, blah, 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 all those things. And it kept me out of the church. But I was running. When I stopped running, none of those things mattered to me. Because I had a relationship with the Lord.
But isn't that the interesting factor in what these young men, what they're attracted to, would be a distraction to them to come to church? To have, and I'm, you know, right or wrong, I'm not really getting into that, on whether or not the Bentleys are acceptable mansions or private jets or what have you, flashy suits or, you know, whatever, crusted, you know, jewelry or whatever, but that's what they're attracted to in the world. But isn't it interesting that they could be turned off from that? And from what I'm hearing, Tony said he used it as an excuse, turned off from that when it comes to the church.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong, I'm not really getting into that.
Because
yes.
I think it goes back
yes.
to what I said about being cool. When you get into the church, you know, you quote-unquote lose all your cool points. So you shouldn't have a private jet or drive a Benz or whatever, because that's what cool, unsaved people do. So I think it's the whole perception that you cannot be relatable, you cannot be cool, you cannot be down to earth and be a Christian. And that's
yeah,
the perception
yeah, and,
that we have to change.
Yeah, but also it could be the family member or the coworker that says praise the Lord after every sentence and always praising God and, you know, all through the day. And then, you know, when the lights go out, they're at the club. They're smoking weed. They're cussing. They're doing all that.
They're
and, you
hypocrites.
Know, and, yeah, they're hypocrites. And the hypocrites got do a good job of keeping people out of church, too.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't that bounce off the kids?
For sure.
So if that doesn't have to go, I don't have to go. And now you got an argument between, you got differences now between husband and wife because you got the kids are using that by saying, I don't want to go, Dad don't have to go, why do I have to go? I know if I said that multiple times when I was growing up.
Hey, I think Derek wants to say something.
Yeah, good evening, fellas. How y'all doing?
Hey, what's up?
Good,
brother?
Man, good.
Good evening.
I think there's two components. First of all, when you're talking about dysfunctional, first of all, if the mom or dad's not going to church and they're just dropping the kids off, yeah, the kid definitely ain't going to want to get into church because they see at the house that it's their family is not being the leader or the head of the house and following the same principles. But sometimes that kid transforms and they want to be involved in with church, but then there's the component of their friends showing up at the church of which they attend. Then they have to fight within themselves of whether they should participate in being in church or participate in being with their friends and doing what their friends think is cool. So I think peer pressure, even within the church, affects what a kid will do.
Good words.
Good words. Good words. Peer pressure. Peer pressure. That goes to a lot that we talked about tonight, that word peer pressure. What society expects us to do, how to live. That can be a huge peer pressure. I think one of the sermons that our pastor talked about this past weekend is fear. And that fear is the fear of showing your Christianity. And that fear of voicing your opinion. And I think it was one more. I can't remember. I got to look it up. But that made a lot of difference between showing your Christianity, that you got to be able to be vocal. You got to be able to be uncool, because it's really cool to be in the presence of God, to know that God died for your sins. Isn't that the reason why we get saved? It's so that we can be different. Because you have a choice. You have a choice to live by faith and live through and know that Jesus Christ died for your sins. Or you have the choice to live by society, what society tells you to live by. And that's that peer pressure where a lot of people, and especially a lot of men, when they hit that fork in the road, they don't know what to do. Is that a true statement?
Yeah.
Ooh, you know what time it is? It's 11 o'clock. So at this time, we had a pretty good call tonight. If anybody else has anything to talk about, we can go right into open mic, or we can answer the question, how do we make this change? How do we change from dysfunctional to functional? That's the last question of the night.
I think you have to acknowledge that you need to make a change, and I think that goes back to what I said earlier about dysfunctionality being subjective, but when it comes down to it, you know, there is a right and a wrong, and, you know, we have to strive to, you know, define, you know, what are we, what is in our household that's wrong, and you have to acknowledge it and strive to correct it. So I think that, you know, you ask the question, when should we do it? I mean, now is as great a time as ever, because tomorrow is not promised to anybody. So, you know, you definitely want to just keep that in mind, that, you know, you may not be here tomorrow to fix it. You know, just start now. Why wait?
Why wait? Good words. Anybody else? Ooh. Well, that ends another virtual talk show for married men. Now it's time for open mic. Anybody have anything they want to talk about? Want to bring to the table? See if we can help each other out?
I don't have anything this week. I had the Valentine's last week.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Well, nobody has anything, and we'll go ahead on and end this call for the season. And say thank you again for joining us, and we'll have another great topic for you next week. And Tom will be doing our moderating next week, and we'll see what he brings to the table for the virtual talk show for men. So, it'll be an early night. Everybody, you ready to have a good night?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to stop the call right now.